Huh?
Oh my god. Yeah. What? Where? What? What are you doing?
Wait, what's going on there, Adam? Okay, welcome back to a dispatch.
Oh my god, we're alive. We're still hanging on. Some of us more than others. Tell us about that, Jeff. Tell us about that.
So we're just in the middle of a battle with COVID. I can't taste anything, and I can't smell anything. So I quit bathing. And what's going on, Adam? Where's Clint? Clint said he can't make it. He's on a river.
Yeah, he's kayaking. He's doing some bourgeois things out there in the streets.
That's what happens.
You know, while things are burning, he decides, you know what? This is the best time to go back to nature. Bring myself a hatchet, a gun, and a kayak, and just live off the woods.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. It's a good time to not be in a city, huh? Mm. Fucking hell.
True story, seriously.
What's going on in Chicago, man? I mean, obviously Houston had, you know, stuff. We haven't spoken for a while. It's been like, what, two weeks?
No, I think it's been like 2 weeks, yeah. What's been going on in Houston?
I saw that there was cops
being shot at it, right? Wasn't like last week some cops got shot at?
Yeah, well, I thought like Houston's been pretty decently controlled in terms of everything, but I know St. Louis got really bad. Looked like, obviously, St. Paul, and then Chicago's an anomaly.
Have a police force anymore, man. They can't. Well, they disbanded the police forces in Minneapolis. What the fuck? Like, how do you expect to like function as a city? Well, is everybody gonna buy a gun now? Like, is that the rule?
I don't know.
Like, are murders gonna get solved? Like, who's gonna be taking care of that? You know, like Joe Schmo from construction is gonna be like taking care of murders.
Well, was it? It was Clint that sent that message, right? So in Atlanta, they officially stopped responding. Is that correct?
Yeah. I guess there was a huge walk-off, and at least for like when that cop got arrested for killing that one fella, the whole police force decided not to respond to any of the calls unless it was a officer down, which is pretty wild. You know, that's the people who are getting paid via your tax dollars are saying, no, we're done. Unless a cop is shot, we're not doing anything.
Well, it's an interesting time. Lots been going on. I was just catching up here, looking at the Tulsa, Oklahoma rally, and obviously Trump was at his comedic finest.
Oh yeah, so, I'm seeing that there's again conversation about how many people were there, which is like really that's the focus. Like this is what the news media is focusing on right now.
Man, I'll tell you, again, like we brought up like 1,000 times these podcasts, but I think if one thing has become very, very, very clear, it's just like, dude, the media in general is just, Jesus Christ, it's terrible, man.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't do anything productive anymore, man. You know what's crazy? And again, like we've talked about this, everybody knows it, I think, for the most part, but isn't it weird that Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post and this isn't talked about more?
Yeah, I feel like there needs to be some sort of cutoff where it's like, the public cannot own the fourth estate. Like there should be not, or the private sector shouldn't be allowed to own the fourth estate. Like news needs to be either, you know, supplemented by like federal dollars or something to that extent.
They just can't be corporations. Dude, you know what the other thing is, man? Like for better, dude, just everything has become so pointless to watch. Like,
because everything's so politicized. That's what it is. Everything's so
liberal.
And identity politics. That's what it is. It's like identity politics.
Everybody's afraid. Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. You can't do anything or say anything. So, I mean, you know, that's what I'm curious about.
You can do that here. And the dispatchers are from nowhere. We got no filter. Fuck you guys. We love you.
Hey, what's the deal with this cancel culture shit and Joey Diaz? What in the what? Huh?
Well, the way I understood it is, I guess years ago on some podcast, he was telling how he's telling Joe and Red Band how you know he had some low level comedians suck his dick to be on stage, which is like you didn't expect that from Joey Diaz, like Uncle Joe. You know he's a scummy, dirty fella. You know the man spent some time in jail, and then they also wanted to cancel him for some jokes on suicide and rape and something to that extent. And it ended up being just a huge blowback because everyone's like, yeah, we know how Joey Diaz is. Like, Joey Diaz is from a completely different time, you know, from New York, grew up around mobsters and gangsters and spent some time in jail. Fella's just a completely different animal. You can't stop the Uncle Joe.
He went to prison for robbing somebody with a machine gun in, I think, Boulder, Colorado.
I didn't know that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, so that was like the big thing that he did. And so that's like the funny thing where they always talk about Joey Diaz, the reason why he can't go anywhere, because he can't have a passport because he's a felon. So he can't leave the country.
Which is hilarious.
But anyways, again, it comes back to this age-old tale of, like, you know, people selling themselves within Hollywood. And it's like, why is this news?
This is the funny thing. They want to cancel Joey Diaz. Meanwhile, all these other assholes are making videos where it's like, oh, I'm sorry for being responsible for racism. Like Aaron Paul and all these other like Hollywood stars. Like, I apologize. I'll stand up against racism. It's like, motherfucker, we know that. Like, everyone stands up against racism. You guys aren't killing racism by making, you know, a 12-minute video telling us how sorry you are. Like, what does that do? What it does is pander. It makes sure that you're on, you know, headline news for a couple days, and that's it. It doesn't solve anything. It doesn't help anybody, and it's in my opinion, a waste of time. Like, I don't want to hear from you people. Like, well, you millionaires in your mansions who do nothing. You more or less just, like, you know, read some lines off a teleprompter and go like, oh man, I am celebrity now. I am the most powerful voice in all of media. Get fucked. Like, I want to hear from, like, politicians who have something to say. Not every politician, but somebody with a plan. Scientists, academics that have some sort of insight into police brutality. And people on the ground. Like Dave Chappelle said, let the streets talk for a little bit. We, like, celebrities don't need to stick their finger everywhere. What are your thoughts
on that? Yeah, it's just their brand, you know? Like, so Andrew Schultz, he just has his little comedic pieces. But, dude, I
love that guy.
He's funny, but I don't know why it's. I thought the best point that was raised is like, dude, look, I mean, whoever's putting this stuff together and telling these celebrities to go out and make these statements, they really believe that people don't see through it?
I think they honestly believe.
That's what I'm saying. But like, that's what they spend hours and hundreds of thousands of dollars of writers and whoever else getting these people together. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see. Nobody talks about this, right?
That's a good point. How does those
were those people paid to make those statements?
Ooh, that's a good point. The thing is, though, this reminds me of something called compassion fatigue, where people get really tired of seeing the same bullshit over and over again. I can't remember the name of the writer. She wrote this book called Compassion Fatigue, how mass media sells war, poverty, famine, and death. And she made this point how she brought up the I can't remember what it was. I think it was the AIDS epidemic of the 1980s, how all these celebrities came together and created this concert, and there was all this music, or Africa Aid, that's what it was. It was Africa Aid of the early 1990s and late 1980s. And what she found is that all these celebrities made more money by, you know, spewing this nonsense and over, like, you know, coming together, saving Africa, saving, you know, fighting off AIDS and all this other garbage, than they actually donated in the proceeds that they made. Which brings back something that me and you and Clint have talked about numerous times in Krakow, which is Kony 2012. All this money was raised in 2012 to catch Kony.
Fading out of the limelight. Holy shit.
Yeah, dude, this guy's still running around like, what is it, the Congo with his army of child soldiers.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Fucking just knocking people out. Yet somebody made money off that.
Well, that one guy ended up jerking it in San Diego in South Park.
I forgot.
Happily pointed out.
Oh, yeah,
Well, it's one of these things. So, like, Dead Aid, right? And Boyle, I can't remember how to say her name ever, but she wrote the book talking about basically Glamour Aid, 1980s. One of the people, I mean, obviously it's been discussed a lot. I think, obviously, when we think about, you know, the development of foreign aid and humanitarian stuff, it, by and large, is kind of just used as a profit-making mechanism that kind of created its own industry. And now, if you criticize that, right, you're kind of a bigot, or you're like, you're going against the trend. But, you know, then you start to look at, like, utility and resources and how
poverty.
To, like, basically...
You want all these people to be impoverished. Like, get fucked.
Right. I mean, when you look at like the activities of like, you know, multinational corporations, Pfizer even, like a lot of the people that are invested in creating the image are actually like the wrongdoers to begin with, right? Like you ask yourself the question of like, you know, why our entire lives has Coca-Cola had sort of like this image of being a global cosmopolitan representative of like we're all part of the human race type identity, where it's like, what are you talking about? Like you guys go around the world and, you know, you're using, you know, competitive advantage to your nature. That's what designs what your corporation does. But chances are you've probably gone against several sort of like basic human rights issues. Dude, well, certainly have.
They used to have like slave farms for sugarcane. Like,
right. Yeah. Well, it's like Nestle, right? Like all of like basically all of cocoa plants in the Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana, right? Are built off like child slavery for you to get like your little Hershey's chocolate bar.
Whoa, dude, it's an internship. Yeah. It's a chocolate internship is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. But, I don't know. I always find it pretty hilarious. Like, look, it's 2020, and actually it's almost the second half of 2020. Well, officially the second half.
Dude, it's been like 10 years.
Nothing's really happening, right? But it's like, to this day, to our core, nothing has really changed in terms of, like, we know the information's there. We know what you guys are saying is complete nonsense. Mm. Yet, there's zero mobility towards these things. You know, I'm curious as well, like, for Black Lives Matters, all of that slogan now has been put on the back of all EPL jerseys, right?
Is it really?
So I've been, like, you know, the EPL kicked off again this week, so I watched a few of the games. It's like, how much money are they collecting for that? And then the other question is, okay, if you guys have this identity where you're pushing for whatever it is, like, again, like, it's not very clear, right? They wanted, like, again, like, they wanted to have those guys arrested and tried, and, like, mm-hmm. you can't be doing these things as a cop and not expect to go to jail, whatever. But then it's like, okay, so where is that money going if you're not for profit? And then what is sort of the goals of BLM in the next steps forward, right? Now you're like an official organization that's probably cooked in several million dollars, right, for that namesake. Mm-hmm. Where's the money going? What's the idea? What's the next, like, why don't I ever hear from these leaders? What's the plan?
That's what are you going to do? I think that you just bring up a very good point, which is, where's the money going? But is there even a central leadership to BLM? Because a whole bunch, it's like a hydra. There's just so many heads, talking heads on TV representing BLM that you don't know who's actually in charge, which is very dangerous because when you have an organization whose board is more or less just 100, 200 people, the siphoning of money can be easily, you know, it can begin like that.
Brett Weinstein, Brett Weinstein, he was also an academic who was on Rogan's podcast, that pointed out these issues relating the hypocrisy of the academy, right? It's sort of like where this could all go. He highlighted the same issues with Occupy, right? When he was like against Occupy and it was like oppressing or like going against the idea of TARP mm-hmm. and these other sort of bailout mechanisms that were existing for the big banks during the 2008 financial crisis. Other mass large corporations, whatever, there was sort of an agenda. But once you lose the scope of an agenda, then what is the actual goal of a movement, right? Movements need to have some sort of teleology, right? What is the goal, right? What is the end? What are the means? And then how do we move forward to discuss, like, here's where we can actually enact change? I don't see this anything more than, okay, yeah, we can have another conversation about race and identity, right, and systematic racism globally, whatever, however you want to term it. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean anything unless you actually have a way of, you know, addressing the situation and, say, problematizing how you're going to build something out of this. I mean, otherwise, it's just hot air. And for more or less, somebody's probably making a pretty decent paycheck out of it.
Yeah, but you don't. That's what it's about. It's all about just blowing hot air. You don't really want to solve the problem. Then you become obsolete. You become the dodo bird of that active, you know, that activism. I feel like there's not really a drive to solve the problem, because then BLM would become, you know, like I said, obsolete. So you just got to perpetually say that there is racism, even if there isn't, which I'm not saying there isn't racism. I'm just saying that BLM only exists
I think everybody acknowledges this issue of racism. That's no longer the issue, right? Like, okay, look, you know, and I think most people that you talk to would all agree with what took place, you know, with George Floyd was abhorrent and,
of course,
should be dealt with to the full extent of the law. But my question is like, once you start these mass activist movements, and once you get bring it to the point where, hey, look, like we're running the gambit between an extremely infectious disease that's, you know, it is what it is, you know, and it has had a huge economic impact, and it continues to do so, and it's a huge question on everybody's mind. And if we're going to the extent to which we're hosting and encouraging these mass protests, you know, with the risk of everything getting shut down again, there needs to be like a real goal or, you know, steps in the process to where we're actually heading.
Well,
beyond.
This is a really good and interesting point you bring up, because numbers have been going up of people who got infected with COVID, you know, over the past 2 weeks. And nobody on mass media is mentioning that maybe it's the protest.
No, they refuse to.
All these people in the streets, like...
They're all saying it's because of the gradual reopening. It's like, not at all. I mean,
it has absolutely nothing to do with the reopening.
You had 70,000 people close to that in Houston, shoulder to shoulder, wearing masks that are made basically made out of T-shirts. And first of all, guys, if you're listening to this and you don't understand the basic sort of mechanisms of how a mask is created for preventing some sort of virus, it needs to actually meet certain standards so the fibers and everything else are small enough so that the disease can't go through it. So even if you're out in the streets and you have a very cute looking or badass looking little mask on, chances are, if it's not minimum N92, you're going to get infected.
Yeah, dude, so, but mine's got Hello Kitty on the front, so that shit's legit.
Exactly. And I think this is what's ridiculous. Like, again, it's denies the reality. So, okay, of course, WHO is culpable for not releasing quicker. Like, yeah, okay, you guys should wear masks. But again, it doesn't really, it's not so much masks, right? Like, this is like a big debate in Vietnam. It doesn't matter if you have like a little paper mask on. It needs to meet certain standards.
Yeah,
so once
of course.
Say that, you know, and like people are like, oh, look at us. We're doing this makeshift thing. And now I'm selling like 10,000 masks a week through Amazon that I made out of old underwear. Okay.
You know, like, so yeah, you're doing, power like, the charm offensive. Like, you definitely jumped on the bandwagon, but your masks aren't protecting anyone.
Yeah, you know? It doesn't
matter. And I don't think people need to... I have to say that people need to start focusing more on their immune system than the masks. And social distancing. I think social distancing is important. Like, if you know for a fact, like, the person across from you may have been sick, may have been around certain people, why the fuck are you hugging that person? Like, give it some time, you know, like, relax, like, go to a bar, yes, sit outside, but don't, like, start hugging everyone and anyone you've seen. Like, I get it, people are depressed, a new study just came out that 7 out of 10 people, it was like 1,500 people were asked how they're feeling as opposed to, like, 3 months ago, and 7 out of 10 said that they feel depressed and, you know, all that usual nonsense of feeling blue, which I get it, you know, no human contact, all that. But come on now, you can't just all of a sudden forget that you might be responsible for somebody else's illness. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel that's more important than the masks.
Well, again, it comes down to this basic understanding of science. Like, dude, if it doesn't matter, first of all. Second of all, like, if you're going to come up with a solution to it, you actually need to, like, you know, stick to it, right? So all of a sudden, like, we're saying all these things. Like, dude, look. Nothing is going to change if we don't start with a basic understanding of, look, here you go. Like you said, immunology, or like your immune system, right?
So
this is an American problem to begin with anyways. I mean, like, look at the epidemic of obesity and diabetes. Like, that
is a
diet issue.
They're just big boned people, man. What are you saying, epidemic, man?
Well, I mean, think about it. Like, dude, look, people die because of their poor immune systems constantly in this country.
Oh, for sure.
They take very... very, very poor care of themselves to begin with. It's not COVID killing them so much. It's 20 years of poor decisions. Like, you know, that's why you have these huge issues. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if for whatever reason, like in America, Samoa, if all of a sudden like COVID's the most deadly. And it's like, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. They consume so much sugar.
They have like a 90% obesity rate in that country.
You know, at the end of all this, it's going to be very interesting to see all the data very clearly, you know, like maybe 3-4 years down the road. Looking at like their weights of the people that died, the other health problems that they've had, the underlying conditions, and where they lived, because I feel like that's also not being talked about. Because it seems to me that most people are obviously dying in cities, yes, but they're also dying in locations where the air quality is shitty, and you know they're usually smokers. There's some sort of there has to be a connection between the type of lungs that these people have and, you know, the threat of COVID to these people, obviously. I mean...
Well, that was another issue, though, because they were saying, like, for instance, like, nicotine actually had, like, a potential to, like, block coronavirus. So it's like, that's why they were curious. Like, well, smokers weren't actually dying at the rate that they thought they were. So then again, it's like another misconception. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah. So... you know, The Economist put something out, like a French study did. This was probably a month or two ago.
Oh, the French made a study about smoking? Come on now.
Well, for instance, they did have pretty low rates of death, right, compared to Italy.
Now, yeah, obviously, but the French are completely different diet. Their diet isn't, you know, right, fucking pasta exactly. And pizza.
No, yeah, they're very health conscious when it comes to what sort of food they eat. And I think, again, it's like the problem with Corona, by and large, is people just want to have an excuse. It's like, no, I want to have a reason to say why I'm a victim. Not that it was literally I've eaten McDonald's every day and I'd never go for walks even. You know,
that's very interesting. It's like Corona's become like an extension of victimhood or like victimization, which is really fucked up. Because how can something biological, how can a disease become, you know, victim making all of a sudden? But then again, I'm looking back at cancer and it's like, oh, I'm a survivor, you know. People look at themselves as somebody who's finished some sort of warfare. I just finished reading Christopher Hitchens' book called Mortality. It's a very short 100-page book about the 6-7 weeks or maybe a year. I'm sorry. It's the year where he found out he has esophageal cancer.
Esophageal cancer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he writes about his the way people treated him, and they treated him like a victim of somebody else's, like as if somebody caused him to have cancer, as opposed to it being just something that happened. You know, he writes about how. All these religious folks, because if you don't know, Christopher Hitchens was very, very against religion. He believed in Aristotle, Plato, and Michel de Montaigne's way of morality over God, I guess. And all these religious folks came out and said, "This is God punishing you." And within like just the first 7 or 8 pages of that book, he says like, "No, no, no, like I'm not gonna play the victim here. Like what happened to me is literally my fault for smoking and drinking this whole time. And you know, if I did something different, maybe I wouldn't have had the cancer. But if I did something different, I wouldn't have been Christopher Hitchens." And I think now with regards to the COVID, these people are saying they're victims, or you know, they're having this victim mentality without looking back at, as what you pointed out, 20 years of bad health choices. And, you know, just not being out in the public. Like, when the CDC said, "Hey, don't go to bars, don't go to movie theaters," people fucking flocked to bars, movie theaters, and beaches. Like, your choice, like, there's causality to all this. And people need to start realizing these things, I think.
I mean, it's lack of awareness. But, I mean, also, it's like, look, okay, this also does not deny, like, systemic issues, right? Like, poor education, whatever, that exists in certain impoverished parts of the United States or globally.
But can we always just, like...
But it doesn't have to always...
Ignorance? I feel like ignorance is just a way out for people to stop using reason.
Well, I just feel like in this day and age, the cop-out to state that, oh, I have poor health because the society dictated this is what I can afford to eat is bullshit. I mean, look, up until... maybe the 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding of like what basic nutrition is and exercise and well-being was not as well discussed. But dude, we are in like a hyper society, like obsessed with health and exercise. There's never been more discussions about this ever in our history, probably.
Oh, yeah, so nowadays, for sure.
It's like, if you're not working toward that, I mean, come on. And it's even to say like the public broadcasting systems, like, I don't know, it was NBC or CBS or whomever did like Biggest Loser challenges, right? Or like if you watch TLC and you're sitting there watching like My 600 Pound Life or any of these like, stereotypical shitty fucking reality TV shows. Like you understand this is a root cause of bad health in America. And then you also understand America is not a preventative based healthcare system, right?
Of course, you don't make money that way. The hospitals can't make money. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, well, that's the same thing for COVID, right? I mean, there's a reason why, like, hospitals have done quite well, right? Pharmaceutical companies are going to kick off. The market has responded rather well. That doesn't necessarily reflect the direct actual economic reality that most people in America may be experiencing. But it does reflect the idea that, like, over time, still, whatever it is, people refuse to actually implement the things they learn. And now we have this issue of just, like, pure negligence. And you still want an excuse as to why this is the fault of, like, you know, the oppressive patriarchy. And it's like, look, yes, elements are always going to be there, but that is not the main cause. And, you know, CNN, you should be very guilty of, I mean, if I were to ever sign a petition to have one thing taken off the air, it should be CNN. I mean, look at what, like, the things that Chris Cuomo has said relating to the coronavirus, relating to the necessity to have violent protests, right? The necessity to back violent rioters, right? The necessity to not condemn Antifa.
Oh, yeah, this for sure. Is, not only that, but he also lied about, you know, being quarantined. Like, he pretended he had corona.
Yeah, it all went away. It all went away.
It's
right?
It's wild. And I agree with you. I feel the media is fueling a fire.
His brother is the governor of the most important state in the United States.
Yeah, most populous. That's ridiculous. Or no, California's most populous, my bad. But yeah, for sure. The most important state in the whole United States. And for some reason... I don't know. They're talking about something completely different. Like, let's not talk about COVID. Let's talk about the protests, which doesn't detract from one or the other. I'm just saying.
Well, instead of that, they condemn Bill de Blasio. It's like, I don't give a shit about Bill de Blasio. Dude, look, it's the same thing here in Texas. Like, Abbott, the governor of the state, can overrule any municipality decisions, right? So when they decide, like, oh, you're mandating masks. Like, no. Abbott's like, look, I'll recommend it, right? And I'll say people working in restaurants need to. But if you're a regular citizen or resident of the state of Texas, you are not required to wear a mask. Now, whether that's good or bad or whatever, that's not the debate. The problem is like, look, Andrew Cuomo had all the capabilities to do so many different things the way in which he approached COVID, regardless of how you view the situation. And he literally has a direct microphone of one of the most watched nightly newscasts in America through his goddamn brother.
Yeah.
I mean, you're kidding me. Nobody's sitting back and saying, like, oh, there isn't some sort of collusion or, you know, conflict of interest taking place here?
Of course not. Well, why would there be a conflict of interest?
Hey, Adam, did you see that they're going
to... We got to talk about how we're two really good brothers and, you know, how mom said this and that, and we're going to laugh about it on TV. We're not going to talk about the important issues.
No, that's it. Yeah, exactly the problem. But no, we saw that thing this morning, right? They're going to try to rename Yale.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. Like, that's just so ridiculous. Like, oh, all this stuff of just like, we're going to like scrub American history from anything and everything.
Well, it's got to be global history, dude. They're going to get rid of the statue of Cecil Rhodes at Oxford.
What the fuck? Like, these people need to start relaxing. Like, all these assholes turning down Jefferson and Washington. And fucking, what is it, Ulysses Grant statues. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're literally erasing your own history. Like, this is what Stalin did. When he came into Eastern Europe, he destroyed all the national hero statues and then replaced them with, you know, himself. What he did is he made sure the past was completely destroyed so then he can rebuild and recreate a new future. Like, if all of you assholes, if anyone is listening that's from Antifa, that's destroying all these statues, like... All of you guys talk about 1984 and George Orwell, how we need to make George Orwell a fiction again. But you're doing exactly what Big Brother did at the very beginning of that book, erasing history and, you know, scrubbing it to become something completely different that the state can use later on. That's literally fascism. It's fascism and Leninist Stalinism. Like, okay, I get it. There's a whole bunch of racists that have statues, a whole bunch of slave owners. You know what you do with those statues? You take them down and you put them in museums because they have to be preserved. They have to be kept alive in a way to remind people of how horrible other people were and how horrible people can be to one another in the future if we forget about how shitty we were to one another. Like, okay, 155 years ago, you know, slavery was abolished, blah, blah, blah. Big, huge thing that happened. However, we're scrubbing all of it, scrubbing all the fucking evil that was happening here simply because we don't want some fucking asshole, you know, up above us in metal form. And I heard a really great joke about this. I can't remember who told it to me, but they were saying like, okay, I get it. You know, there's a whole bunch of assholes that have statues. But what did the horse do? Like, why are you tearing down the horse? The horse didn't do anything to anybody. And I think we need to think about this not only in regards to looking at our history and realizing how horrible we were to one another, but also look at it from a semi-humorous point of view of what are our kids going to think about us scrubbing history? Like, will they be laughing at us for being stupid and reacting so emotionally? Like, come on now. Relax.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's one of the issues, like, you know, moving forward. I mean, some of the best lessons you can learn in life are from the worst examples.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, like, if you don't keep that in the back of your mind, then you basically just decimated the relevance of history.
Oh, yeah.
History doesn't need to be rose-tinted. It needs to be the truth about what took place, mm-hmm. yeah. by human history. And, you know, renaming things, right, tearing down statues. The other problem, I would say, most importantly, is like, look, well, if we were in a much more literate society where people actually did read and care and, like, actually educated themselves, then maybe you could say, like, all right, whatever, like, you know, learn through sort of these other mechanisms. But, dude, it's a 15-minute news feed, right? Like, people, the second, like, all of a sudden, give it 25 years and, you know, things will revert. And people will be treating themselves just as terribly as they ever did. I mean, even today, dude, like, we're at a peak today in terms of human slavery numbers. We're at a peak today in terms of huge issues related to human rights. We're destroying our oceans. We're destroying our environments. We are literally condemning ourselves, condemning the next generations to potentially some of the worst experiences that human society will see. And not to mention, you know, this COVID thing, yeah, it happened now. But don't forget, like, this isn't a one-off, dude. Like,
dude, this is literally the smallest number of deaths via pandemic ever.
Populations continue to rise. Infectious diseases will become more and more communicable. Dude,
Thomas Malthus.
Yeah. Well, I mean, his was more relating to the issue of, like, scarcity. But, like,
yeah,
still,
food
same
and
idea.
Everything. Yeah. True. But
the other problem is going to be more related to the fact of, like, how... Again, it's... Look... Not to denounce the importance of talking about, you know, shifting society in a way that can be more inclusive or whatever. But more importantly, I also think, like, what are the real solutions, man? I don't see anything going on in terms of, like, dude, like, wet markets still are fucking going every day in China. Like, where the majority of the second largest coffee producer in the world is Vietnam. And where the majority of those beans are coming from are infested with bats. They're talking about these huge issues related to, like, potential more communicable diseases coming from, you know, transspeciated issues, mm-hmm. Corona in particular, where they've been having this huge research grant looking at what could be the next sort of viruses. They've been looking at the bat populations in Southeast Asia for years. They identified COVID-19 back in like 2004 as something that could potentially affect the human population. Like, that's just one of thousands.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the solution? What is the next? It's clearly not shut down the economy, right?
Well, the solution is to fund... some sort of organization like WHO that isn't, you know, listening to one side or the other. Have somebody that's literally just independent. And you can't have these assholes, you know, suck on the tit of free money. You have to earn it in some way. You have to have independence in what it is you're doing and not, you know, have 15% of your money coming in from the U.S., another 15% from China. And, you know, it has to be, there has to be backbone in the people who actually make the tough choices. And there has to be some sort of collective, universal university academic exchange of information concerning these viruses. And, you know, these I know the big thing that they're worried about is the potential of all these I think we talked about this before, all these pigs getting this this fungus that kills the pigs and can be transferable to cattle as well, because that's a huge thing. If our food supply goes, then we go. That's something that also needs to be addressed. And I think I just mentioned is semi-idealistic because governments are really protective of the information that they have. But universities need to start exchanging things and start working towards science. Something that, you know, what's the Brett, but
Weinstein?
Yeah, Weinstein mentioned, which is that universities and academics aren't, you know, they're chained to the idea of having that scholarship or having that the grant around their neck. So they're not working toward things that they want to work towards. They're working towards things that pay. And I think that's a huge problem that we're having.
Well, I mean, in relation to the university system, you know, this is exactly what they're talking about. The problem with the university system nowadays is that it's gone away. I mean, look, you know, ideological, deep, sort of intrinsic metaphysical discussions used to be reserved for humanities departments, right?
Oh, yeah.
Writ large.
For sure.
It was just like, you want to get into critical theory, you want to delve deep into post-structuralism, you want to have any of these, like, heady, non-applicable debates, like, go nuts, right? And this was always, like, the underwriting joke. Like, yeah, get a degree in philosophy, right? And then go sign up for unemployment the day later.
True story.
Because you're never going to get a job. But, I mean, now it's become, like, it's like universal now. Now it's like dominant within the departments. Like, how much of this stuff now it's trickling into like the hard sciences where...
Oh, a lot.
We shouldn't be having conversations about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think that you know about this more than I do because you were part of the American university system. Meanwhile, I'm over here in Europe trying to figure that out. And from my experience, these people are actually more... more clear-headed than they are in the United States. The professors
and the academics
I'm dealing with here in the States are very ideological. They're not focused
I just finished up teaching at a Vietnamese university. Like, I was based in European universities, right? And did a PhD in the United States. Like, the problem with the United States now is that it's bloated, man. Look, for whatever reason, whatever funding was coming into non-hard sciences basically became this gambit of, like, you know, fulfilling the prophecy of the oppressed. And that's where all the money goes. And
it goes back to Foucault's power
dynamics,
man.
Jordan Peterson said
it
too. Defund them all. Stop paying for them. Stop giving these bloated tenured salaries, you know, for fucking departments that are completely and utterly, you know,
useless.
Really just subsections of other larger debates, of other larger fields of scholarship. And work toward the common good. When in the world did the university shift from being a place where we're supposed to be sharing ideas to benefit the greater community to personal agendas?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think it goes back to what Nietzsche said, which is the worst place for knowledge to grow is the university.
Well, that couldn't be more true than it is today. And that's a sad thing to say. I hate to say, you know, I wasted too much of my time doing this stuff. I mean, whatever it is, what it is, you know, it still is. There's still merit in it. But what's taken place, say, over the last 20 years, we'll say a rough estimate, has destroyed the academic community. It's destroyed what it was actually initially in place to do, which was really give people a place where they could discuss openly different ideas that were probably heavily critical of standardized sort of worldviews that were viewed on a daily basis in the politics that they were subjected to, right?
Yeah.
Like, you would be able to talk about these philosophical understandings, interpretations outside of, say, the context of a religious scripture would be something that would probably, in you know, 300 years ago, potentially get you put to death.
Which is interesting, because I feel there needs to be some sort of separation of politics and academia in a way. The ideology of politics of, you know, post-structuralism, post-modernism need to be taken out of the university setting because in a way it completely corrupts the way that research is done. You're automatically looking through a prism of not the scientific method, but, you know, an ideological power dynamic, you know, in anything. All of a sudden, Dickens isn't, you know, one of the greatest individuals who commented on poverty. He's an individual who's spreading prejudice through his writings. Like, what? Like, how did you come to that conclusion? You know, you're not looking at things objectively. And I understand, like, academia, especially in the humanities, is about interpretation of certain things. You know, looking at politics, literature, society, and anything, and interpreting it through whatever prism you have to. But when the only prism you're looking through is post-structuralism and post-modernism, what you always see is victimhood, oppression, and you know, Foucauldian power dynamics, and that's just not true.
Let's be clear about this. The reason why the discussion comes down to the dynamic of power is because this is the way in which they can gain funding. Mm. Like, It has nothing. I mean, look, I'm not saying that 100% of the time
just people say it. Are doing just fucking this. Say it.
Well, 100% of the time people are doing this because they're not like duly invested in the cause. Mm-hmm. But like you said earlier, if it's what's required for them to receive their grant from whatever, you know, boards or whatever are determining who's going to receive funding, employment, tenure, whatever, they're going to jump on this bandwagon. And again, it's driven by the individual need, right, for, say, the dissolution or the desecration of the greater good of the society. And this is what we're seeing today. Rather than people coming together to say, look, all right, like mass consensus probably comes to terms of saying, like, look, let's work for a fucking greater good. Let's work to, you know, find some sort of measurable, rational way to bring about some sort of change that doesn't yes. further divide the population. Instead, they're just force feeding the stuff to push people further and further apart and make them more and more party centric, right? And yes. against yeah. this idea, like, listen, it's like the echo chamber mechanism within sort of like the human psyche is at an all time high. Even to the extent to which, like, you know, somebody will send me something along, I'll read it. You know, I'm interested in seeing the other side of the view of the argument and how they're defending themselves or whatever it is.
As you should.
But it right? never, but dude, honestly, the majority of people I talk to, that's never the case. People, look, I'll send stuff out. It's like literally 4-minute read. People are like, oh, I'm not reading that. It's too long to read. And then you tell them that's like, yeah, but it's like, no, like, there's no point entering into any level of discourse if the person on either side of the discussion is 150% not willing to actually do 16 seconds of research on their own.
So now I wonder what that is. Do you think it's the inability, or rather the inability to actually comprehend the data that's going through their eyes and to their brain? Like, they read things, but because they're...
People just don't want to be told they're wrong.
You know, people need to be told that they're wrong, though. Like,
this is the thing
I've been wrong numerous times, that I've learned from other people that, you know, I believe is fucking completely and utterly right. Like, or wrong, I'm sorry. And, you know, if I wasn't told, like, hey, Adam, you're a piece of shit here and here in your thinking, you gotta, you know, look at this book, that book, and, you know, watch this movie and or talk to this and that person, you know, I wouldn't be looking at things from, you know, up on top. I'd still be looking things from, you know, down below, seeing the sky and not seeing, you know, the world as it is.
Well, I'd say, like, this is the thing, right? So if for whatever reason we were to say that academia is supposedly you're working within a purely scientific construct of asking, right, testing hypotheses mm-hmm. and trying to better understand situations, what's actually taking place now is the inverse, right? Like, the real thing that should be taking place is, look, okay, this is a curious question I have. Why are things this way? Let me investigate and see if there's a different answer to this question. But instead, mm-hmm. it turns into is just like verification finding. It's just a fact finding thing. Like, all they want to do, it has nothing to do about your research orientation, your question, whatever.
Well, it's patting yourself on the back. It's saying, oh, right. I did so well in what right. I was.
So it's for. Like, it's basically, you know, like Karl Popper argued against, right? Like, so that's why there's the yes. issue of, like, if you're trying to do stuff, it's through falsification rather than verification. But now what's taking place today is people are just trying to continuously verify that they're right. And if that's their mode of thinking, that from even before doing any sort of research or entering into any sort of conversation, you're already right, and there's nothing that's going to change that, then this is the fucking situation that we end up in now, that we're seeing today, where, again, it's, I don't see people coming together. I don't see people trying to rationalize or better understand situations or sociopolitical or economic or cultural actions or actors. I just see people coming together to say, no, I'm right, you're wrong, this is why it is, and I will not listen to a goddamn word you say. And if you say anything with any sort of conviction or provide me with any sort of facts, I'm going to label you as a racist, right? Or as a bigot or somebody who doesn't empathize with the global good.
I'm not saying you're a racist. I'm just saying, yeah, I agree.
Well, it's like Antifa, right? Like, go and have like an honest conversation with somebody who works for Antifa. And it's like, even from them, from the get-go, I work for the anti-fascist movement that was founded, right?
And guess what? North Korea is the Democratic Republic of North Korea. Like, your name doesn't signify what you are. Your actions.
Well, aren't most states that way? I mean, it's always the republic, right? So a republic is the demos. It is the people, right? Every communist country, right, is the socialist republic, right? So it's
democratic, man. The people elect us.
Well, right. So the Republican quality was like the Kantian construct of like, in order to have some sort of like cosmopolitan and sort of like the nations of it was like, you know, what really begat the League of Nations was sort of these philosophical underpinnings. Was like, look, if this is to exist, then one of the fundamental qualities that needs to exist for this to be in place is that the participating nations need to be republics, right? So governors elected are done by the people, and to an extent, therefore, you'd have to say there has to be some level of freedom of speech. Otherwise, right, like, what's the point? It wouldn't even matter anyways.
Well, this goes back, for me at least, to the allegory, Plato's allegory of the cave. For those who don't know, the allegory goes that a whole bunch of idiots are, you know, in a cave, and there's a fire in front of them, and the shadows they see before them is, they think that is the reality and that is the truth. Meanwhile, some fella goes outside and he sees the true light. You know, he sees the world as it is. He sees the real light and he's like, oh shit, this is a tree. This is this. It's not shadows on the wall. And then he goes back into the tick cave and he tells the people, like, no, this is the truth of everything. And they ignore him because, you know, the shadows on the wall, they're right there. They can see him. So the thing outside of the cave can't exist because they're so used to everything here inside the cave. And for me, the way I see it is that the people inside the cave are in charge right now. They see their fantasies and they see their illusions and they see their power dynamics and their you know, their vilifications and their power struggles and you know, identity politics, and they think this is the reality. This is the struggle of this generation because they haven't seen the thing outside of the cave, which is war, poverty, you know, fucking bombs just dropping down on cities, hunger, starvation, real problems that are out there. Literally just, you know, within a couple days, everything can change, which is what this, you know, COVID and the protests showed. And academia is just that. It's looking at shadows nowadays. And it's not looking at the reality of science and the scientific method, or even, you know, just theory as theory. They don't look at theory as something that, you know, may or may not practically work in the world. Well, they see theory as law.
It's just rejectionist, right? It's like, this is the big... So, like, when the founders came together to create the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, the big debate was like, all right, like, how do we make this inclusive enough? In other words, how do we make it so that we have a plural enough base that's actually giving the interpretation of natural rights into the rights that we're building, right? So, like, what's important to you? What's important to them? How do we come together in sort of like this multiplicitous, diverse situation of which we're all sitting in? Okay, well...
And this is right after everything has gone to shit. You know, the world's been on fire for so long that they just want everyone to be in some sort of way cooperative and happy. I think that's very important.
So attrition, mass murder, and genocide needs to stop, right? Like, that's like the crux of the situation. Like, the Holocaust just ended. Like, we're like, holy shit, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? Now, what's very unfortunate, I would say, at this given point in time, especially from the academic side of things, is that they're falling victim to the exact same issues that they were criticized of doing, right, at the end of the Second World War, which was, you are putting forth a Western elitist mentality and structuring to what you deem to be the most important facets of governance and society. And this is why, for instance, oftentimes, by and large, right, all these things are non-binding resolutions, and it's very difficult to get people to sit into some sort of orientation where you could say, well, this is a better form of governance, X, Y, Z. Now, I think the big problem here, for example, would be Iraq, right? Like, prior to the ousting of the Ba'athist Party, under a dictatorship, Iraq and Libya under Gaddafi were actually relatively peaceful places.
Well, yeah, but they were peaceful because, you know, there was fear. And there needed to be fear because those countries were very sectarian, yeah.
But again, it's like, if you look at, say, the toppling of these regimes that we did without actually having a plan in place, the issue is that we operated under ideological claims to basically destroy societies, and we haven't given them an actual out. Iraq is a failed state now. Syria is a failed state now. Lebanon, Libya, you know, the places where our hands have been for the greater good of, you know, 60, 70 years are places that don't meet the standards that you need to be considered a functioning society, which are things like sanitation, very, very basic healthcare.
Yeah, but food. You see, I also think that us going into these countries and saying that we're going in there because of ideology, because of freedom and democracy, I think that's the naive bullshit that the government sold the people. You know, we're trying to bring freedom to Libya. Meanwhile, they're there for obviously just natural resources and make sure that there's fucking chaos so they could do whatever the fuck they want. I think that you have to be, at least in my opinion, semi-cynical when you're looking at these places, because we're not there to bring freedom. I mean, that's maybe what the soldiers have been told. You know, that's why they're they talk to these villages, they talk to these good guys on the ground. But what we're there for is strictly for our own personal interests, economic interests to be sure, and the economic interests of big companies such as Raytheon and Boeing, who are making bombs and weapons that are constantly being sold to the U.S. government. I think that's a big part of this whole democracy movement.
Do you think any of these people that are far left-wing, progressive, diehards, bad orange men type people, do you think they ever questioned what people actually need versus what it is they actually think people need?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a very, very good question you just asked, because what people, when they look at something like that, what we need and what we want them to need are completely different, because we look at it from, at least for these people, they look at it from their own perspective, and the empathy or the other side is so skewed to them that they obviously think that these people are either ignorant, racist, or completely wrong in their thinking, that they're unable to even, walk a mile in those shoes. They just don't understand.
And do they fundamentally not understand the term scarcity?
No, so, I mean, I think narcissism plays a big deal in this.
In other words, if you spend, say, 95% of your time pursuing issues that they think are the most important, that now, I mean, for lack of better understanding, right? The number one social movement now today is Black Lives Matter, bar none, across the board, right?
I think so, stateside. Globally, it's huge. Save the planet and stuff.
The publicity like this has gone it's gone bonkers, right? I mean, even for whatever, Greta Thunberg was like, oh my God, why does the environment get this?
With regards to that, I just want to say, Greta Thunberg needs to shut the fuck up. This is a girl that hasn't even graduated high school, and she's telling fucking people who have worked on fucking viruses their whole careers what they should be doing. No. Greta, listen. Finish high school, and then we can talk.
Andrew Schultz said it pretty well again, right? Like, why have a child come out and be your advocate? Well, because you look like an asshole if you're going to tell a child to shut up.
Well, sometimes kids... Hey, listen. There's a great, great, great old saying, which is, children should be seen but not heard. Until she becomes a woman, she needs to shut the fuck up.
Well, as my father always said, you're not worth talking to until you're 30.
That's a great statement. It's very true. I agree with that.
I think, though... What my point is, though, it's like there's so much attention now being paid, which fine, whatever. I don't care. Do that. But think about the problems that now we're overlooking. Like, we're not looking or paying attention to issues as much as we should, revolving around different things with human rights abuses, with hunger, with poverty, with pollution.
Terrorism go? Terrorism disappeared. No ISIS anymore, huh?
Well, this is the thing. Is ISIS staying in? Why is nobody saying this in a public forum, that the media, look, one guy is, right? Donald Trump, Fox News, they say it. But people that are taken seriously, nobody's stepping out and saying the media is heavily complicit in the destruction of our society and the, I would say, mass, lack of better words, just mass desecration of humankind globally, because now we don't give a shit. I mean, for instance, dude, when was the last time you saw Venezuela come in the news? Those poor people are starving, and they're being manipulated every 6 ways from Sunday.
Drinking water, no toilet paper.
It's terrible.
People are fucking dying in droves.
So it's like that thing. It's like, that issue of, relativity, right? Like, not in my backyard kind of thing. So people don't pay attention to it.
Yeah, but the thing is, not in my backyard is one thing. Destroying Western civilization that literally gave you the freedom to say whatever you fucking feel like saying is completely different. You destroying your own freedoms, you destroying your own history, you telling other people that, they need to shut the fuck up, while not having a dialogue, or not even trying to have a dialogue, because automatically the other side is wrong. that to me is the beginning of how empires fall. Gibbons talked about it. Schopenhauer mentioned it. We need to start looking at what's happening within our own society, within our own Western civilization, and try to figure out why we're trying to commit suicide.
What's crazy to me about this entire thing is, so obviously, don't care how you sit on this. Obviously, the big problem in the United States is that we're allowed to access guns, right?
Yeah.
So with this big issue, we see, look, one way or the other, I believe that people should be able to have access to public land. I believe in the ability that if given our diets, given our preferences, people should hunt. This is something that we should all be exposed to.
Yeah, for sure, of course.
So on and so forth, right? But by doing so, you give the federal government the ability to use the full extent of force to take care of you if they do feel at any point in time a threat. You, by having the Second Amendment, by having the right to have a gun, by the fact that you do have things like conceal and carry, you give the U.S. government the capability to come at you with anything that they can to protect the people that are serving us as police in our societies. Now, given that, what's really astonishing, and I follow the news probably more than most people, but not like, you know, obsessively. So maybe there has been stuff out there, but I don't, and now, nor have I yet to today, actually seen any statements or anybody coming out from the NRA talking about these protests or these issues of police brutality or, you know, people talking about the issue of guns in America.
Well, it's, I mean, why would the NRA, you know, voice anything?
I don't know. Well, I mean, like, I would assume somebody would have attacked them at this point going forward, and somebody would have said, what the fuck's going on? Why are we supporting guns in our society if this has become, like, a pandemic or an epidemic? I mean, like you said yesterday, dude, like, how many fucking gun deaths were there in Southside Chicago last weekend?
Dude, it was like 44 people were killed and 90 people were shot.
Yeah,
it's that's insane. Just last weekend, dude. I think this weekend was something. Let me look it up, because I saw it earlier today, where it was pretty big news. Where it's like Chicago was doing really, really, really well. Oh, here it is. Just this weekend, 60 people were shot, 9 fatally.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Like, how is that not reported on national news? Oh, just went up to 61, so somebody just got capped. So 61 people just got, 61 people shot, 9 fatally.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I mean, went up right now, like, as we're on recording here.
And nobody talks about this.
This is very important. People are getting shot because there's fucking guns out there. But there's also
greed. Right, and so I think also, there's a reason, right? There's a reason why police are so violent. There's a reason why cops are so aggressive. And, you know, it's not necessarily 100%, 110% of the fact that, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, power hungry, you know, aggressive individuals who police the United States, which obviously happens.
Let's say 1 in 10 or even 2, you know, 1 in 5 cops is a piece of shit. Let's just say, hypothetically, there's those 4 in 5 that are pretty decent fucking human beings. And we need to start acknowledging that like these people deal with some crazy shit, especially in cities. Like people in New York, Chicago, LA, dude, those cops see crazy shit day in and day out. You fucking bust in the door, oh shit, somebody's brains are fucking all over the ground. You bust in through another door, there's fucking guy raping somebody. You bust in through a fucking another door, there's a, you know, heroin overdose. You see so much crazy shit that it's like you as a civilian judging these police officers, you know, against your own perceptions and not being able to put yourself in the shoes of that cop, you know, that automatically tells me all that I need to know about where you stand as a human being looking at another human being. Because you're unable to comprehend the horrors that these people see. And they have to go back to their family and pretend everything's okay. You know, I get it. I get it why some cops break down. I get, you know, dude, some cops are obviously pieces of shit. I can't stress that enough. But there's certain ones that just break. And, you know, we need more, I guess, just psychological training and, you know, support these guys. Because the country run in a way. They make sure that there's no chaos and people aren't shooting each other like they are in Chicago.
Well, it's gonna be a pretty dark period going forward if the cops receive less and less support. I'll say that. I mean, I think again, it comes down to these like important issues that nobody really talks about. So again, we were talking on the phone earlier, texting about the terrorist attack that took place in Reading in England.
Yeah, that's last wild night. Too.
So you know, an assailant ran through a park, stabbed a group of people. Three of them died, I believe.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to this issue. Like, we are in a period of chaos with so many different countervailing issues that are affecting our society. You know, we are in a very, I don't know. It's uneasy. People are.
Yeah, I call this. I created several chapters in my PhD on this. I call this cultural chaos, where we don't know where we stand morally. So we pretend that we don't stand anywhere morally to begin with. And we start creating a new sort of government out of this, a new sort of authority, which is the authority of the crowds, a sort of zoocracy, where, you know, the authority of the zookeeper doesn't matter anymore. The animals are in charge, which is very dangerous.
I like that. That's very well put. Well, Adam, hey, look, we're right at an hour, and I'm a little sleepy with COVID.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Jeff, get fucking better. Get your vitamin D in there. Get your rest.
Stay healthy, I did buy some vitamin D.
Good. Has that been helping?
I don't know. It's probably should have been taking it before, but I mean, like I said, like everything's fine. You know, I can't smell or taste anything. First few days were a little bit more mealy, you know, cold sweats a little bit. But yeah, I mean, look, again, like I've always said,
get some, you know, chicken noodle in there, man. Chicken noodle.
I had a
really
severe thing going on in Vietnam, whatever that was. These cold costs. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a different strain. I, you know, what I'm curious about to kind of wrap up this thing is like, dude, there's so much back and forth now about what we don't understand about so many different things. And now if we take COVID as like a microcosm, just imagine what that means for like the rest of the things that we always talk about in a large way relating to like, say, cancer, you know, all sorts of different diseases that people are afflicted with. Yeah, I just realized, like, you know, it's a crazy complicated situation. But one thing's for sure, the way in which governments, you know, globally react to these certain scenarios definitely should be done differently. And, you know, regardless of whatever took place, right, protesting is always good. I think this is what people need to do, whatever, you know, to reach some level of justice in certain societies. That's all fine and well, but we do need to realize there's going to be blowback because of these things. And we do need to realize as well that this is going to be, say, like a flashpoint where we need to start to rethink about how we try to hold quarantine. And, you know, I don't know, man, like, we can't destroy our society over infection, because this is going to be a continual problem, I think, moving forward with the sort of never-ending spike in population growth.
I think what we need to do as Western civilization is to start growing some balls and not have China and Saudi Arabia dictate what we do.
Yeah, I mean, especially on the latter. I mean, I think we talk about the global supply chain, and you know, East Asia is going to be a huge part of that for the next 100 years, if not longer, if not, it always has been, really, right? Since, say, like,
since
spice
the
trade
of,
and the opium wars.
Beginning of civilization. East Asia's, yeah, you know, the route to development, more or less.
But we need to think about that. We need to realize this. We need to take what's given and then work within that. We don't need to take what's given, deny it, close things down, destroy people's lives, all because, you know, as Adam said, we don't have, for lack of better words, a set of balls that, you know, we need to be really coming together. And I think, like you said, Adam, like, you know, Saudi Arabia, Jesus Christ, that's a whole other issue.
That's a different issue, but it's an issue that should always be in, you know, individuals' peripheries. We have enemies out there that are always pretending to be our friends. And, you know, not to sound Cold War-ish, but we should always look out for ourselves and our allies first, and then look out skyward or horizon-wise.
Sounds good, guys. All right. Well, hey, we'll catch you all later this week. Hopefully Clinton can get back.
Yeah, hopefully. All right. Share, subscribe. Thanks for listening, and all the best to you guys. Stay healthy out there.
All right. Take it easy. La 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 la.